Good afternoon, everyone. We're so pleased that you could come out and join us this afternoon. You know, the governor and I took different directions this morning to do a little preview of this energy rollout. I went to Elkhart and to Gary. The governor was in Terre Haute and in Vincennes and in Mount Vernon. And let's just say I had a little better luck with my air travel than he did, but he's here and raring to go and spread the good word. You know, we're very pleased to be unveiling another key piece of our plan for Indiana's economic comeback. That's our strategic plan for energy, titled Hoosier Homegrown Energy. And you know, it's no accident that companies have invested and they've expanded in our state. There's an environment here that's very attractive to business. The governor and I and our entire administration have fought very hard to create that environment. We know that the strength of our economy will determine Indiana's success across the board, and that's why economic development remains the linchpin of our entire administration. With the rollout of this energy plan, we now have in place a major component of our strategy to rebuild Indiana's economy. You will recall in April, we unveiled the state's economic development plan. It was called Accelerating Growth. It's designed to encourage investment, to raise Hoosier income, and to help our friends and our neighbors gain the necessary skills for future employment. And today, we're very excited to share Hoosier Homegrown Energy, which will help us bring new investment in energy and develop stable, reliable energy that will make Indiana even more attractive to business investment. The Office of Energy and Defense Development has developed this plan over the course of an entire year. That's with input from the energy industry, from environmental interests, and concerned citizens all across our state. It's the first state energy plan in a 20-year period, and I'm confident that as we move forward from the plan to action, we can make energy an economic driver instead of an economic drain. As we implement this plan over the coming weeks and the coming months, we'll continue the momentum of economic success we've built in bringing more than 15,000 new jobs and more than $3.3 billion in private investments to the state all in the past 6 months. Now, I'm very pleased to turn this program over to my partner, Governor Mitch Daniels. He's going to share the details of the plan. As all of you know, my partner is a man of action, so rest assured we're already at work putting this plan on the ground across the state, and with the help of many, many partners, we'll make Indiana's energy production and availability a cornerstone of our economic growth for years to come. Let's welcome Governor Mitch Daniels.
Thank you. I could claim that I stalled around on my arrival to make sure y'all read the plan and had done your homework. But you would see through that. We were thrown back today by some bad weather and had to do a little improvising, called several audibles. But I've been in West Terre Haute, site of the nation's largest, one of only two, but the largest IGCC facility. I've been in Vincennes, where we will train some of the 3,000 miners minimum that Indiana will need in the years directly ahead. And I've been in Evansville to make an announcement related to renewable fuels, which I'll share with you here in just a second. But despite our most aggressive remanagement of the schedule, I was thrown back a little. I didn't even stop for the sport coat, which I put in the car to grace this occasion, so I hope you'll all forgive that. Let me go straight to the point. I am speaking to a room of very knowledgeable people. Thank you very much for coming. Your presence on a Friday afternoon reflects, I choose to believe, your knowledge long prior to arriving here of how central this topic is and how obvious it is that a roaring economic comeback of the kind we are determined to bring to Indiana, that we believe has begun, cannot happen absent a very aggressive set of new strategies to make certain that we have ample, affordable, and homegrown energy to undergird and enable that comeback. So I'm going to just take you through a very quick summary of things that I know each of you has probably already shared with our fellow Hoosiers on other occasions, but we've tried to organize the argument in a little way and that can help those who haven't had the same opportunity to study the data and think through these subjects that that you have. Now the tricky part, someone has placed an implement here, which I'm guessing has something to do with these slides. It's a miracle. Really, this is the way I look at the overall situation. When I am selling Indiana, as I do every single day, to a business somewhere, perhaps a business here that's contemplating growth, perhaps a business not yet active in our state, in my now well-honed sales pitch, inevitably and invariably, I talk about, as one of our strengths, our affordable and available energy, specifically the low cost of electrical power, but also the availability of energy in its other forms. We must not lose this advantage. We need every competitive edge that we can have, and this is one in our grasp today, but we've not built a new, but it cannot be taken for granted in the future. You know, we've not built a new baseload electrical plant in this state for 3 decades, and the lines are about to cross. If I were fully confident that this would work, I would, who knows how to back this thing up? Let me not take a chance on it. Let me just say to you that we are within less than the time it takes to build a baseload plant, we are destined to become a net importer of energy if we do nothing. That's unacceptable, and as I say, would undercut much of the rest of our strategy. And also would forego an enormous opportunity, apparent I know to everybody in this room, that resides specifically in our coal reserves. We also should not overlook the fact that energy production itself can be a direct creator of jobs and income for Hoosiers, including in many parts of the state, Southwest Indiana being where I've just spent the day, being maybe the best example. Can be a tremendous generator of new employment and new wealth for Hoosiers. You know, I was in Gas City earlier this week on a topic that didn't have anything to do with energy, but no accident, of course, that town is named what it is. About a century ago, all around Indiana and in, of course, the area of Grant County there, we were extracting natural gas in huge quantities. It was burnt off into the atmosphere. There was so much of it. To some extent, the Indiana economy of a century ago was largely built on energy. It can be again in somewhat different ways. So, as I've expressed it here, or did express it on the previous slide, can you do that? Now you're going the wrong direction. Anyway. The report you have here will be incorporated in subsequent printings of our overall accelerating growth economic strategy as part and parcel, and as well it should be, because we must have a winning energy strategy in order to maximize our full potential as a state and to support the rest of our economic strategy. And I know this is clear to you, but this is a great opportunity that our fellow citizens need to see. I've already talked about the fact that we are at risk of being subject to importing electricity at perhaps premium prices for all we know. You, I'm sure, are also well aware that as the nation's most manufacturing-intensive state, and strengthening, frankly, our manufacturing position in the last year and a half, somewhat to the surprise of many people, we use a lot of natural gas. And natural gas is essential to many of the industrial processes that we operate in Indiana, and we import essentially all of that. But we don't have to. And today's supplies have proven unreliable, prices have gone up, and it is now very timely to think about, and smart people are thinking about, other ways to produce natural gas, specifically from coal like the kind we have. And we are in active conversations with people who might like to do that. So, did I just hit that twice? Back it up again. I'm glad we have reverse gear over here. Let's just look at it a little quick further. One more. Stop. You know, here's the data I like to talk about our competitive advantage in electrical generation. In case it's not obvious to you, I mean, some of these bars don't look that far apart, but even versus our some of our near neighbors like Illinois and Ohio, you know, you're talking about advantages of 15 to 20% and much, much more versus states further away. Here on the consensus forecast, the of the state forecasting group, you see the looming problem that really commands us to action. With only a modest margin for safety of 15%, we are about to enter the era in which demand will exceed supply. That'd be a brand new thing in our state. We need to act on it aggressively for the reasons I mentioned. Now, there are multiple ways to act on it. New capacity is only one, of course. Conservation is another. The energy you avoid using is just as valuable as the energy that you, the extra increment, incremental energy you produce. I promised my friend Clark, he loves these little buzzwords, so yes, negawatts and megawatts are both, yeah, both very important. But there's no way to attack this problem that does not include new production, and preferably production of the kind that benefits Indiana the most. The only thing wrong with this slide is that the official data stops two or three years ago. The story gets even more dramatic if you bring it to the current day. And what it shows is that coal on the bottom line is dramatically cheaper per equivalent unit of energy than natural gas and then petroleum. And if you just imagine where those lines are today, for the upper two lines, the delta, the gap is substantially wider. That means that if we can find ways through clean coal technology to take advantage of the enormous asset that we're sitting on top of in Indiana, we can deliver energy that is at more affordable prices and more reliably priced for the future than these two sources have proven to be or are likely to be going forward. So simply restating, we must maintain an advantage that our state to a large extent enjoys today, in which we are marketing as aggressively as we can and need to be able to continue doing that. And we need to view energy production itself as an important new a cylinder in the engine of Indiana's economic comeback, a tremendously promising source of jobs, employment, and wealth. On the bioenergy side and on the coal side, and to a lesser extent from other sources like the wind. Just one more piece of data that I think emphasizes the extent of the opportunity. You will know, but many of our fellow citizens will not, that for all the coal we sit on top of, we import a heck of a lot of it, millions of tons a year. And in essence, we use twice as much as we produce here. The reason, of course, is that the coal we're sitting on is not suitable, given today's absolutely appropriate high environmental standards, is not suitable given old technology at affordable prices. Therefore, we bring a lot of the coal in and leave our own in the ground. That must change and can change. The dollar value of the difference between those lines, of the blue hatched part, is $1 billion. It's 30-odd million tons times $30 a ton. We are sending to somewhere else $1 billion a year we could be paying to Hoosiers. Now think of the economic value if we were paying that out to people who mine coal, people who transport coal, people who turn it into energy, and of the spinoff value of that homegrown energy here rippling through our economy. The renewable fuels story is, I think, better understood in the state. It's obviously been a subject of a lot of action in the last year. It was already well covered in our previous economic strategy and the agricultural strategy that Andy Miller led, which, like energy, is a key chapter, a key component of our economic game plan. But it is well worth reviewing the bidding to see how far we have come, how fast. This is Indiana in January of 2005, one ethanol plant, zero biodiesel plants, total capacity about 100 million gallons a year. Indiana today, 15 plants total, 12 ethanol, 3 biodiesel, combined almost a billion gallons. When Andy and I and Becky began talking about the making a major move in renewable fuels, we sort of threw a dart at the wall, tried to set a stretch goal, and said, wouldn't it be something if Indiana could be producing 1 billion gallons a year by 2008? Essentially, we are there. And the plants already under construction are producing, and that will not take long. One thing I love about these particular investments is that they can go from construction to first gallon out the door in well under a year in most cases. So this took off faster than we had imagined. I sort of supersized a couple of the stars for a reason. The big red one up north is the Dreyfus plant, to be the biggest biodiesel plant in the world. The big green star is the Anderson's plant at Clymers. On the day we announced it, it appeared to be the biggest plant east of the Mississippi, but the market is moving so fast that is being overtaken. And today it was overtaken in Indiana. The big green star at the bottom represents the place I have just been, at the Port of Indiana at Mount Vernon. The Aventine Company, in partnership with our friends from Continental Grain and Barge, announced by far the biggest in Indiana. And this will be a 220 million gallon ethanol plant, twice as big as the largest previous announcement, and either number one or two east of the Mississippi based on anything we know today. You add all this together and Indiana will be, from these plants alone, and this will not be the end of the story, at 1.2 billion gallons a year sometime in calendar year 2007. This is a remarkable surge and a tremendous, to me, proof of concept that if we emphasize energy production, if we structure ourselves to be the most interested, hospitable, and encouraging state around, that these investments will come here faster than they come to other places, and that our energy hopes and plans can be made real, and be made real in perhaps as here a shorter time period than we thought. Here are some details on the CBG facility. This, by the way, is also the largest investment ever made at the Port of Indiana down there. Please note, 78 million bushels of corn. Everyone here, I know, shares my enthusiasm for what renewable fuels can mean to the rural spaces of this state, to the small towns of this state. We don't locate ethanol plants. None of these 14 new plants is located in a metropolis. They tend to be in places like Cloverdale and Linden and Clymers and Claypool. It's a very uplifting byproduct of this whole phenomenon. that it is bringing new life and jobs to some of the towns and areas of our state that have been hardest hit. On the day, the very first of these was the one at Cloverdale, and on that day, an elderly gentleman came up to me on the edge of tears and said he'd gone and checked his memory and this was the first industrial investment in Cloverdale in 46 years. And each of these plants has to some extent that kind of character, to bring new life and money and investment and jobs and tremendous new demand for our agricultural products to the small towns and the areas we care about so much. You've already seen, due to my tardiness, I hope you had a chance to scan the list, the to-do list of action items. I list just a few of them almost at random here. Along with all these, of course, must go an aggressive marketing effort of the kind we make toward businesses of all kinds, but we will make with special emphasis to companies who might invest in coal gasification, might invest in fluidized bed technology generation, might invest in syngas facilities to convert coal to gas, or perhaps coal to liquid fuels that could power our vehicles and join ethanol and biodiesel as a solution to the energy problems that we're facing at the pump today. Earlier today, on arrival at West Terre Haute, I signed an executive order to bring together all those agencies of government that have something to offer or can be brought to bear on this problem in a council that will reconcile any differences and I hope gear Indiana for maximum speed and alignment and consistency of policy. And we will certainly expect that under John Clark's direction to be an active and successful new governmental initiative. That's the story. I think you know what the payoff can be in terms of thousands of jobs created directly and countless thousands more created indirectly through the multiplication of the dollars that we can earn in Indiana from clean coal, renewable fuels, and other forms of energy production, and countless thousands more that will occur because we have an energy base second to none. Thank you very much for your interest in this subject, for your patience with my transportation problems, and if you'd like, Becky and John and I and maybe Andy ought to come up here and join us. We'd be glad to answer any questions before we bring the day to a close. Usually it's appropriate we can start with our friends from the media, but then the floor is open to anybody. Ladies and gentlemen.
You mentioned that the state fleet would be replaced with alternative fueled vehicles. Are you not considering hybrids? And then also, how much more will it cost for the fleet to be purchased in this way?
Well, good question. I think we probably would think of hybrids as consistent here, although we're interested not only in conserving on the petroleum-based fuels, but specifically interested in maximizing the use of and hopefully interesting others in the use of the fuels we produce. So I think our first emphasis will be on so-called flex fuel vehicles. You know, the cost, we'll just have to see. As you know, Leslie, we've shrunk the size of the state fleet by between 2,000 and 3,000 cars so far, and we'll continue looking to make certain that the state doesn't own any vehicles it doesn't absolutely need to own. But as we turn over those many which are necessary, then we'll, as fast as we can, we'll go this direction. John?
The only thing I'd add, Leslie, is that it's our understanding that the flexible fuel vehicles that are purchased at the site of original manufacture as opposed to converted once they're out as a non-flexible fuel vehicle, there essentially is no difference in the cost. And we're talking about simply replacing vehicles as they are scheduled to be replaced in any event.
Thank you, John.
Governor, will this large influx of ethanol produced in the state help bring down the cost of E85 so that it's more economical for drivers of the flex fuel vehicles over a long-term basis?
Over time, more supply will always be reflected in moderation of prices, but I don't think any of us should be so reckless as to hazard any prediction soon. It depends so entirely right now on the competitive price of petroleum. And for the near-term future, I think we all know that's going to dominate.
Governor, given your perspective of the federal budget, how much longer should federal taxpayers continue to subsidize ethanol production at 50 cents a gallon?
For the foreseeable future, at least. I think if Senator Lugar were here, he would, and he's pretty careful about the federal fiscal situation. I think he would certainly stress the fact that there's a national security. You're asking about the federal government. There's a national security aspect here that can't be overlooked. And if anybody lost sight of that, maybe events of yesterday brought it back to mind again. But along with everything else, there's certainly a national interest in liberating this country from the threat of blackmail by people who may care about other things more than they do about making the next increment of money from selling us their oil.
You have one of your issues to provide a certain percentage of renewable energy at state government buildings
right.
by 2010 and 2025. Why does Marion County?
Well, that's a great question, and I think I'd say because that's a start. But, you know, in terms of any of these activities, it's much, in terms of overall volume or effect, obviously it's very, very small. But we do hope to set the right example and stimulate others. And one way you can start that is within state government, perhaps local government schools. A lot of schools are already running their buses on biodiesel, which is terrific. And, again, you just want to build that. You want to build demand to a sort of an inflection point or a tipping point at which it becomes more and more economic for people to supply more, build more pumps, and so forth.
Governor, what does this plan do to encourage more demand? The House Republicans, for instance, had credits for people who bought alternative vehicles. What does your plan do in terms of trying to build demand? And also, what does your plan do in terms of encouraging conservation so that less fuel is used?
Yeah, well, we'll be doing more about conservation, and probably, and I didn't take time with it here, but you can read about it there. You know, I'm very open, by the way, to the suggestions that were made about credits and so forth. Like everything else that affects the state's funds, it needs to be balanced against the, at least in terms of timing, against the imperative to maintain the balanced budget that was so difficult to achieve and to strengthen that situation. Incidentally, on the way here, a little hard news item, since you are folks who appreciate the importance of this too. We got a call today, and the state's bond rating is being raised by Moody's, the investor service. They'll be issuing a report, they tell me, at the first of the week, but apparently it will cite effectiveness in controlling state spending and more promising Indiana economy as reasons for telling investors of this country that Indiana is a better bet than it used to be. And that'll save government at different levels a little bit of money, and it's a great signal that things are headed in the right direction. But, you know, demand, Leslie, is overall demand is a global matter. And I think, frankly, that unless one believes, and I don't, that we're going to see a sharp plummet in petroleum prices, maybe ever again, at least back to levels we knew years ago, I think that the demand for alternative fuels will build very, very quickly. First, based on price. Second, based on preference of many of us to pay our neighbors and not somebody else where in the world. Third, based on the national security interest of the country. Fourth, based on environmental enhancements that these fuels provide.
Governor, of the three major electric utilities that work here in Indiana, only one is even considering an IGCC plant, how, what makes you think that we're going to have more than that one plant to provide the demand for our high sulfur, more polluting coal?
Well, first of all, I think they're all very progressive. They're all very aware of the need that is coming for more power. They're all looking at variations, and there may be interest you're not yet aware of, Martin. I will just say that I'm pleased at the attitude of all these utilities, and each of them is considering new ventures of one kind or another that would use more Indiana coal in a clean fashion. All right, anybody else in the audience? Yes, sir.
I'm Andy Sinclair. I'm an NXP Energy Star program for Whirlpool Corporation.
Yes, sir.
The state of Georgia, Virginia, and Florida have instigated tax credits or tax-free holidays for energy efficiency. Is Indiana considering such a concept for a tax deduction on income taxes?
You mean for energy-efficient appliances, for example?
In other technologies?
Yeah. Well, it's not part of this plan at the present time, but it is worth a thought. It's worth a look. You know, I think once again, when you enter the world of tax subsidies, when we do at this point in our fiscal history, we have to do it very cautiously for the reason I gave a minute ago. You know, we've just had the first balanced budget in the state in 8 years. It wasn't easy to do, and we're not close to being done. We have paid back the schools what they were owed, but we have not paid local governments, and we have not paid the universities, and we have not replenished the reserves of the state to what I consider a safe level against the next rainy day, and we have not dealt with longer term pension obligations the state has. And so there are some tax credits in this plan, and I'm open to adding others of the kind you mentioned, Andy. But I think there we want to be cautious, and we do have to keep an eye on the books of the state as we do that.
Governor Chris Novak, Indiana Corn and Soybean Organization.
Hi, Chris.
First of all, thank you very much for your leadership and vision on behalf of the farmers that we represent. Certainly, to see the growth in agricultural demand is important to all of our members. One of the things we've struggled with as we brought more supply online is making this available, renewable fuels available to consumers.
Right.
We've got 70 stations that offer biodiesel out of 1,200. We've got now 50 E85 stations, but it's still not present in every community.
Right.
There are parts of this plan that will help with that.
Yes, there are. And Becky's been driving this and has had great success. Once again, we didn't know how high up was. We set 40 as an objective for new E85 pumps, for example. Well, Becky got us there by about June or July, and so now we're well past that, and I don't know, maybe to a multiple to it by the end of the year. Still not close to enough, but there are some assistance that she has identified. Some I think are federal funds, and we have proposed more of that in this plan here. Any more? One more. Yes, sir.
And then request for the Public Environmental Affairs. I'm curious about the status of the Indiana-Illinois partnership for the next generation of coal-fired power plant located near here in cooperation with DOE. What's the status?
Thank you, Professor, and for your own scholarship and advocacy in this area for a long time. Professor Rehnquist is referring to a big federal project known as FutureGen, which aims to be a very, very large scale demonstration of new the new technology he mentioned. I enlisted Indiana as Illinois' partner. That was I was very excited about this, but as I dug more into it, I found we'd just been left, unfortunately, kind of left behind. And many other states were well along with their own proposals. And the scouting I was able to do just told me that as a standalone bid, Indiana probably didn't have a chance. But Illinois has some kind of chance. And it's Illinois Basin Coal, as we call it, that we are talking about here. And so I went to the governor of Illinois and asked it if they would like a partner. And we've submitted a joint proposal. I don't know how to evaluate its chances. A lot of states are chasing this. But Should the Illinois proposal or our mutual proposal be successful, I think we'll get very material benefits in terms of, first, the coal that's used, and probably some of the employment that comes from it, and then the technology. So don't know how to handicap the chances, but we are in the race. I want to thank everyone for taking time to be here. I want to ask you all, obviously, to reach your own independent conclusions about what we've suggested. But to the extent that you see the opportunity as we do, and to the extent further that you see these as useful steps to take, I hope you'll be vocal about this and advocates about this. I hope that we can get all of our fellow citizens excited about the opportunity that's out there, and cognizant that inaction is really not an option. And each of you is in a position to be influential and heard on this, and I hope you'll choose to do so. And I hope, as some of these questions suggest, that you'll help us find ways to improve and amend this program going forward. Thank you very much.